This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Now, Jancis Robinson, a very famous wine writer, described Riesling as the world's most misunderstood and mispronounced grape variety. But it is often considered the king of German vineyards. In fact, you might say Riesling is the king of white wines. We're going to start off by just giving you some of the key characteristics of Rieslings. Then we're going to talk a wee bit about the winemaking. And finally, we're going to talk about how Riesling is grown around the world in some of the key wine regions that it grows. The key characteristics of Riesling. It is a Vitis vinifera grape variety, which means that Vitis vinifera is the main type of vine that we use for wine production, and the Riesling is a variety, just like Merlot, Cabernet Sauvignon, etc. The big thing about Riesling is it prefers cool climates. It likes it quite cold. You don't see Rieslings in warm countries, and part of that reason is it's well adapted to the cold. It tends to bud quite late, which means it avoids a lot of the spring frost you get in these cool continental climates. And it's also very tolerant to very cold winters. If it gets too cold, minus 15, minus 20 degrees, it can kill a grape variety, whereas Riesling tends to be quite tolerant of that. Because it tends to grow in these cooler places, they tend to be higher latitudes. But one of the advantages you get with high latitudes is they tend to have quite long days, which gives you plenty of time for the Riesling grape to ripen. The cool climates also mean that, particularly cold night times, if you get cold night times, you tend to hold on to the flavors and the acidity in the wines. But Riesling naturally tends to hold on to its acidity as the sugar levels rise. Some grape varieties, as the sugar levels come up, the acidity comes down very quickly. Riesling tends to hold on to it. And then you add the fact that it's grown in cool climates, you'll find that Riesling tends to have quite high levels of acidity. It is what we call an aromatic grape variety. Aromatic grape varieties are wines that tend to have loads of flavors to them. Other aromatic grape varieties you might have heard about are things like Sauvignon Blanc, Muscat, Gewürztraminer, even Torrontés, which is a grape variety you see in Argentina. Now, I did say it buds late in the season. It's also a mid to late season ripener. So the time from bud burst to ripeness is mid to late compared to other grape varieties. And the length depends on the style. Riesling's quite adapted to make a range of styles. Some people like it dry, some people like it off-dry, medium, sweet, sweet. Even lusciously sweet wines can be made from Rieslings. In the cooler climates, the flavors do tend to be more like green fruits, green apples, and floral flavors. But as the climate that the grapes are grown in gets a little bit warmer, you'll get more citrusy and stone fruit. And some of the grapes that are used for sweet wines, where they've left the grapes on the vine for extended periods of time, can get into even stone fruit and even tropical fruits from time to time. Now, as I said, Riesling has lots and lots of acidity. It is one of the white grape varieties that does age particularly well. It's one of the reasons we call it the king of grapes, is because it will age. You can get 10, 15, 20-year-old Rieslings. And as they age, they develop this very distinctive petrol-y, kerosene-y, oily-type characteristic, along with maybe some honeyed and toasty types of notes. The acidity will hold up, the wine will age beautifully. If you've got a sweet wine with a little bit of stone fruit or tropical flavors, and you add a little bit of honey and toastiness in there, and a little bit of oiliness in there, that's a very delicious wine. One of the things about Riesling is it is susceptible to botrytis. Now, botrytis is a mold that grows on the skins. Now, if it happens after the grapes are physiologically ripe, flavor ripe, then we call it botrytis. And what happens is the mold grows on the skins, it shoots roots through the skin into the grape. And if you get the right conditions, normally where the mold gets a chance to grow, maybe in damp mornings, and then burning afternoon sun drives down the mold on the grape skins, those little holes made by roots allow tiny amounts of water to evaporate from the grape. When you lose that water, you increase the concentration of sugars, flavors, and acidity. So botrytis is a great way of making really powerful wines, but they've got to be ready for it. You know, it's got to be at the right time of the season for it to work. If it's before that, we call it grey rot. And the problem with grey rot is it tends to stop the ripening process. So if it happens too early, the grape's going to be ruined. And because of that, botrytis, or even just late harvest, you can make Riesling grapes dry and sweet. In fact, in some places, such as Alsace, Germany, and Austria, they make in a range of styles from dry to sweet. But other countries like New Zealand, Australia, or America, they tend to make it in a particular style. So, for example, in Australia, the wines tend to be pretty much always dry. Just because in Australia, they're looking for a dry, high-acid style of wine for their climate, and Riesling fits the bill really well. Let's talk about the winemaking. Now, I did say that it is an aromatic grape variety, and people can make aromatic grape varieties in a number of different ways. Sometimes they'll get the whole bunches, and they'll just press them straight into a tank. Quite often, they'll give the grapes a little bit of short skin contact. So you'll crush the grapes, let the juice get out of the grapes, get in contact with the skins, and the skins have bags of flavor in them. And a very short period of contact, you know, a couple of hours perhaps, maybe even 6 hours or more, can give the grapes a little bit of zippy flavor coming through from the skins without really extracting any tannins. They normally do it as a cold soak where you don't get the tannins coming up, but you get lots of flavor coming out. And finally, sometimes they'll just crush the grapes and press them in immediately. It just depends on the style of wine that they're trying to make. One of the key things, though, is quite often with aromatic wines, they tend to ferment them at quite low levels. If you think about alcoholic fermentation, it's normally between 12 degrees and 35 degrees, with white wines typically fermented between, say, 12 and 22 degrees. Well, Riesling is going to be down the bottom end of that spectrum. Aromatic wines tend to be fermented more at the 12 to maybe 15, 12 to 18 degrees fermentation. You've got to be a little bit careful not to let the fermentation get too cold. Grapes will ferment at sort of anything from about 5 degrees onwards, but quite often if you try and ferment too low a temperature, you can get this sort of slightly artificial pear drop flavor coming through. So you want to make sure that you're not too cold, but the key thing usually with aromatic wines is you want the fermentation to be cold enough so that you don't lose some of those floral and fruity flavors. I always think of it a bit like if it gets too warm, those very light, delicate flavors will boil out of the fermenting juice and you'll lose those flavors. So fermenting at a nice low temperature helps hold on to the flavors. With Riesling, some people use commercial yeasts, which will give you a very pure flavor to the wines. Some producers like to use ambient yeast, whatever's lying around the vineyard, wild fermentation, as some people say. That will give you wines with lots of complexity, but you'll lose that purity, and sometimes the wines can taste very, very funky indeed. Now, as I said earlier, Riesling can be made in a number of different styles. Sometimes the fermentation will go all the way through and it'll be a dry wine. Sometimes they'll chill the wine down and filter out the yeast. And when they do that, you can stop the fermentation early before all the sugar's consumed. And in that case, you can make an off-dry, a medium sweet wine, or even a sweet style of wine. Some of the wines have got so much sugar in them. This is usually wines made through botrytis or through concentrating the grapes using ice wine. And when you've got grapes with loads and loads of sugar in the grape must, the grape juice in the tank is so, so sweet. What happens is the alcoholic fermentation will start, but sugar is actually a poison. If the sugar levels are too high, it's a bit like salt. It'll kill off the yeast. So as you start the fermentation, the yeast is struggling because it's quite sweet. And then, as the fermentation continues, the alcohol levels go up. The sugar levels go down, but the alcohol level goes up. And as the alcohol level goes up, it becomes more and more poisonous to the yeast strain. It gets to the point where the actual yeast strain will stop fermenting naturally all by itself. If you look at something like Sauternes, which are botrytis-infected wines, they can stop fermenting typically around 12.5, 13.5 degrees alcohol, and they just stop. There's still sugar in the wines, but it's just poisonous for them, and they'll stop fermenting. If you try and use a really, really super sweet wine, maybe with lots and lots of botrytis, or you're basically trying to ferment raisins, then you can get these incredibly lusciously sweet wines, and the alcohol will stop fermenting very low, 2, 3, 4% alcohol. It will just naturally stop because of the mixture of sugar and alcohol is just too poisonous for the yeast. I did vaguely mention ice wine. Ice wine is a method of making concentrated grape juice to be made into sweet wines. And what you do there is you leave the grapes on the vine for a period of time, and hopefully winter will come. Grapes will freeze on the vine, so you need sort of minus 8 degrees for 10 days or minus 10 degrees for 8 days. You need it really cold for a period of time. All the water in the grapes freeze. You bring them in, you press the grapes, and all the skin and pips and frozen water stay behind in the press, and what comes out is this super concentrated grape juice, which is perfect again for making these sweet wines. When you are fermenting the wines, quite often you'll ferment them in stainless steel. Stainless steel tanks give you a neutral, inert tank, and also you've got really good temperature control over stainless steel. Quite often stainless steel tanks have really, really good temperature control, so you can control that temperature to be nice and low. Not everybody uses stainless steel. In Alsace, they use these weird, huge barrels called faudries. I'm not sure about the pronunciation. F-O-U-D-R-E, faudry. And these barrels are huge, and they're incredibly old, you know, 100-year-old or more. They've also got tartaric deposits coated on the inside. So the barrels are very old, and the wine really doesn't come in contact with wood because of all these tartaric crystals on the inside. And as a result, it can be treated almost like an inert barrel, even though they are, in fact, oak barrels. The idea of using these barrels is, in Alsace anyway, they believe that it adds a little bit of texture to the wine. Whatever way, once alcoholic fermentation is finished, a lot of these aromatic styles, not just Riesling, but Sauvignon Blanc, etc., you don't tend to do things like malolactic fermentation or malolactic conversion, depending on who taught you about it. Malolactic conversion or fermentation is the process where bacteria gets in and converts the maloacid into lactic acid, and that makes a softer, lower acid wine, but it can sometimes produce a lot of buttery flavors, and buttery flavors and Riesling don't tend to go together, so people tend to avoid malolactic. You will see some premium versions of Riesling being lees contacted. Lees is the dead yeast after fermentation. So usually after fermentation, you might have some little bits of skin, etc., called gross lees. That'll fall to the bottom of the tank pretty quickly within a few hours of fermentation stopping. And then you rack the wine off. And if you leave it for a bit, the dead yeast cells, which are very, very tiny, will then start to sediment out and form at the bottom of the tank. Sometimes people will do a bit of lees work, let the wine lie on the dead lees or dead yeast for a period of time. That can build texture in the wine. And occasionally, not very often, but occasionally you may see some autolytic characters, some bready, yeasty-like characters you sometimes see in champagne. But lees aging, not very common, and mainly for premium wines. Normally most people don't tend to blend Riesling at all. You'll have Riesling just as a single varietal wine. And they tend not to age the wines in barrels either. Most Riesling is just from stainless steel tank, bottled, off you go. You will find occasionally some premium producers in Germany might leave the wine in very old barrels for a period of time, and they're hoping to build some complexity in that. Not very common. Usually you'll just get the Riesling straight out of the stainless steel tank, put it straight into a bottle, and hey presto, you're ready to go. Let's have a quick look at Rieslings around the world, and we'll start with Alsace, which is in France. And in Alsace, there's a number of grape varieties they call the noble grape varieties of Alsace. Riesling is definitely one of those, but along with Muscat, Gewürztraminer, and Pinot Gris are all considered noble grape varieties. And the thing about Alsace is, quite often these wines are single varietal, and if you bought a Gewürztraminer thinking it was a Riesling, you'd be pretty shocked to find that it's actually a Riesling, because they're quite different wines. So varietal labeling's always been pretty common in Alsace. Even in the rest of France, where it was banned to put the grape variety on the bottle, in Alsace, it was always the case that you could have varietal labeling. Thankfully, a lot of France now allows varietal labeling of the wines. Now, I did say that Rieslings hardly ever blended, and this is absolutely true. I would hardly ever expect to see any blends. But in Alsace, if you do get a blended wine, it's often called an Edelswicker or a Gentel. Now, Riesling's not normally in these blends, but if you do see a wine saying Edelswicker or Gentel, it is a blend. You might see a little bit of Riesling in there, but I wouldn't expect it. I did say that Riesling is a noble grape variety in Alsace, along with Gewürz, Pinot Gris, Muscat. But Riesling is definitely the most planted noble grape variety in Alsace. And it typically makes wines of medium to full-bodied, quite often dry, although a full range is available, medium alcohol, high acidity, and in flavours, you're often going to be in that citrusy to stone fruit flavour profile, sometimes with a little bit of stony, steely character to it. Now, I did say at the beginning, Riesling is the king of the German vineyards, and pretty much every region in Germany grows Riesling, except for Franken. Now, there might be some Riesling in Franken, but it's not one of the key grape varieties from Franken. And in Germany, unlike places like France or Alsace, in France they have an Appellation Contrôlée, AOC or PDO, whatever you want to use the terminology. In Germany, they have two types of PDOs or appellations, if you like. You've got your Qualitätswein and your Prätigkeitswein. Now, a Qualitätswein is like an AOC, it's like the French equivalent of an appellation. You either get it or you don't. But if your grape juice, your must, the sugar in your grape juice is high enough, it can qualify for what's called a Prätigkeitswein level. And a Prätigkeitswein level says that the level of natural sugars in your grape juice is high enough. And if it's high enough, the levels are Cabernet, Spätlese, Auslese, Baron Auslese, Eiswein, and Trockenbaren Auslese. The way I tend to remember it is a little bit non-standard, but the way I try and remember it is this. A cabinet tends to be like a cabinet. It's a dry, dusty thing. You don't expect cabinets to be full of sugar, and cabinet is the lowest must weight. It has the lowest level of sugar in the juice. Spätlese means, spät means late, lese means harvest. So this is a late harvest wine, and typically it won't have any botrytis in it, so it's late harvest, not particularly sweet, but late harvest. Auslese means selected harvest. So what they're doing is they're going around the vineyard trying to select extra ripe levels of grape juice. So Cabernet, Spätlese, and Auslese are all based on their must weights, but you can ferment them, and you can ferment them all to dry, or you can stop the fermentation earlier. Cabernets and Spätleses can be made dry up to medium sweet, whereas Auslese can be dry, off-dry, medium sweet, or even sweet because the sugar levels are high enough. Once you get above Auslese, the wines can only be sweet. You cannot ferment them to dry. The sugar levels are so high that the yeast will naturally die off before all the sugars are fermented dry. So the next one is Baron Auslese, and that means berry selected harvest. What they're going around is they're going around selecting individual berries that have hopefully got a little bit of botrytis on them. And that botrytis gives you shriveled up berries with lots and lots of concentration. So berry selected harvest, and that must be a sweet wine. Eiswein is ice wine, where, as I said earlier, you get the frozen grapes, you press them, and then the frozen water stays in the press, concentrating the sugars. And again, that can only be a sweet wine. And then the last one, which is probably the most famous and definitely the rarest that you'll ever see, is Trockenbaren Auslese. And that means dry berry selected harvest. That means that the grapes are individual berries that are so riddled with botrytis, they've lost so much water over that period. They're actually dried up raisins. So it's about how dry the berries are. Dry berry selected harvest, Trockenbaren Auslese. So in Germany, a lot of the quality levels are all about the hardest thing you can achieve, which is high levels of sugar, because Germany is a cool continental climate. You know, it's not particularly warm, and getting grapes with high levels of sugar is quite hard. Hence, the whole quality level is based on how much sugar is in the grapes before fermentation. But there are some pretty famous dry German Rieslings out there. And there's a group of producers in Germany known as VDP, or Verband Deutscher Prädikats von Güter. VDP is what most people remember. If you look at some of the German labels, you'll see this sort of falcon or hawk. I'm not sure what the bird is, but it's got a big bunch of grapes in the center. And the VDP producers are a self-selecting group of Germans who think they produce better wines than everybody else. The idea being that they're just a club, and if you're a good German producer, you might get invited to this self-selecting group of German producers. The key thing here is they have a particular style of wine known as a Grossgewächs, or GG, Grossgewächs, and this is a dry wine. And VDP are good producers, so if you ever like dry German Rieslings, then if you see a VDP label and it has the GG on the bottle, that's telling you that it's a dry German wine. Another way to tell if a Riesling is dry in Germany is the alcohol level. Wines with 7, 8, 9% alcohol are almost certainly some level of sweetness. But once you get into that sort of 10.5, 11, and certainly 12%, you'll know that there's very little, if any, sugar in those German wines. Going around the regions, Mosel is... in Germany is certainly considered the lightest style and certainly the most acidic. Mosel is one of the coolest regions in Germany and certainly one of the coolest popular regions in Germany. And it produces wines with a lot of sort of green apple flavors. Because it is so cold, getting the grapes ripe is pretty tricky. So in Mosel, it's right on the river Mosel, and you're going to see things like reflected light bouncing off the river into the vineyards. The vineyards are going to be on hills, and the best vineyards like Gobtropschen or Birkenstahl are all south-facing vineyards, steep south-facing vineyards. So they get that energy from the sun square on, and they get lots and lots of heat coming in from the sun. There's also a lot of slate in the Mosels, which heats up and radiates heat back into the vineyard in the evening, extending the growing day. So Mosel, probably some of the most famous with their sort of austere green apple, steely acidity. Right next door to them, to the east of the Mosel, is Nahe, and that's very similar to the Mosel. Maybe a touch riper, but very, very similar to the Mosel. Probably my favourite German wine region for Rieslings is Rheingau. And here, you've got a south-facing vineyard right on the Rhine River. Again, sometimes you get some aspect in there as well, but these grapes get a lot riper, and you often see things like riper stone fruit flavors coming through. Still lots of racy acidity, but you might see a bit of peach coming through in the wines. As you head further south in Germany, you get into regions like Pfalz, and Pfalz, again, is fruitier, fuller style of wines. I personally see a lot of more floral characters in the Pfalz wines. The final region that does grow Riesling reasonably much is Baden, right in the south. And that's where the climate starts to really warm up, and you're going to see the fullest, biggest Rieslings around. Now, one thing that you don't normally expect is sparkling Rieslings. But the Germans do make a lot of sparkling wines. A lot of Sekt, which is what the Germans call sparkling wines, is actually grapes grown maybe in Italy or France, trucked into Germany, and then gone through a tank method, like a bit like the Prosecco. And they just do a tank method and make a very cheap, easy drinking wine. But if the grapes come from Germany, you can call it Deutsche Sekt, which means German Sekt, German sparkling wines. And Riesling is a very important grape variety here. Most of them are made using the tank method, but you will see occasionally, a bit of top quality German Riesling made through the traditional method of sparkling wine production. Once you've finished with Germany, the next obvious place to go is Austria. And Riesling, along with Grüner Veltliner, are the two key grape varieties for Austria. Perhaps Grüner Veltliner is more important because hardly anybody else grows the Grüner. But Riesling is a very important grape variety. And Austria is very similar to Germany. They have a very similar Prädikats system as Germany. So you've got your Cabernet, your Spätlese, Auslese, Baron Auslese, Eiswein, and Trockenbaron Auslese. But Austria also has a couple of extra Prädikat levels as well. They have a level called Aschbruch, which is sort of between a Baron Auslese and a Trockenbaron Auslese. So again, Aschbruch will always be a sweet wine. And the other one is a style called strovine or straw wine. And that's where they lay the grapes out on straw mats, effectively, drying them out. In Italy, you might call it as appassimento or passetto, but in Austria, you just call it strovine. And you dry the grapes out, you lose moisture as the grapes evaporate water, and then that can make, again, concentrated, sweeter styles of wines. Do be a little bit careful about Austria. There is a grape variety known as Welsh Riesling. In fact, there's a lot of different grape varieties with the word Riesling on them. Welsh Riesling is not a Riesling. It's not a Riesling grown in Wales or anything like that. Welsh Riesling is a completely different grape variety. Now, in terms of the regions, the two big ones, there is lots of little regions around Austria, but all the wine growing regions I'm aware of are to the east of the country, simply because to the west of the country, it's very mountainous, very, very mountainous. And the climate is still reasonably cool climate. You get some mountains, you're going to get altitude. It can be a bit tricky ripening grapes. And at the top east corner is a region called Niederösterreich. And that's got some very famous vineyards, Vacau, Kamptal, and Krempstal. And Niederösterreich is known as Lower Austria. Now, the reason I think it's called Lower Austria could be because it's not as mountainous as to the west, or more likely it's because it's further downstream of the Danube River. And the Danube River is a big river, and it runs through a lot of the quality vineyards in Niederösterreich, in particular Vacau. As I said, the climate is cool continental, particularly in Niederösterreich, and it's cooled by cold northerly winds as well. So it's not a particularly warm place to grow grapes, but you get these zippy, high-acid styles of wines. To the south of Niederösterreich is a region known as Burgenland. And Burgenland, again, is a cool continental climate, but now you've got this warm wind blowing in from the Hungarian plains. So Hungary to the east of Austria, and you get this lovely warm wind coming in from there. The big claim to fame is that there's a lake known as Lake Niedlersiedler See, and that lake has those perfect conditions for botrytis. It's got misty, cold mornings, warm, dry afternoons, possibly being dried out by some of that warm Hungarian wind coming in. But those conditions mean that Lake Niedlersee has a particular reputation for producing very fine, sweet wines in Burgenland. In the USA, you don't think of Riesling normally as a big grape variety from the USA. You'd normally think in Cabernet Sauvignon and Chardonnay. But even in California, there is a little bit of Riesling grown. Right at the very top in Mendocino County is a wine region known as Anson's Valley. Now, Anson's Valley can grow Cabernet Sauvignon, but it can also grow Riesling. It's all about how close you are to the Pacific Ocean. If you're quite close to the ocean, you've got this cold current running down the side of California, and that cold current can bring cooling air inland, misty mornings, cooling sea breezes inland. And in Mendocino County, near the coast, is a region known as Anson's Valley. And Anson's Valley, if it's near the Pacific, can grow Rieslings and Gewürztraminers. If you head a bit further inland, there's a few hills starting to pop up. If you get around behind those hills, that cold sea breezes don't come in, and that's when they're growing things like Cabernet Sauvignon. When I think of Riesling in America, I don't think of Mendocino County and Anson's Valley. I think of New York, and in particular, the Finger Lakes District. Now, the Finger Lakes are a series of very deep glacial lakes that are in the shape of fingers. They're just these long, narrow fingers. It looks like something out of a cartoon or something like that, you know, a series of fingers spraying out, if you like. And the thing about the Finger Lakes District is, those deep glacial lakes, is that as the season comes to an end, those lakes are warm, and those warm lakes extend the growing season. So you can actually continue ripening Riesling all the way into November if you need to get those lovely ripe flavors that you want. Now, we've talked about Riesling being a cool climate region, and the further north you go, the cooler it gets. And Canada has a reputation for producing Rieslings. And along with Vidal and Cabernet Franc, they produce quite a lot of ice wine. In fact, I got into the wine trade literally, not Riesling, but literally drinking Vidal Ice Wine from a vineyard, Inniskillen Vineyard in Niagara-on-the-Lake. Now, Niagara-on-the-Lake, or Niagara wine region, is on a lake, Lake Ontario, and it's a pretty big lake. And what happens is, in winter, it's quite cold. The lake's very cold. It's a big, deep lake. And as you come out of winter, the landmass heats up, but the lake water is very cold. That's the big thing about water, is it takes a long time to heat up and cool down compared to the landmass. And as you come out of winter, the land's starting to warm up quite quickly, but the lake's very cold. And that cold water stops the bud burst, which is great because if you're in a continental climate like you have with Niagara, just as you're coming into spring, you're getting a lot of hot days, but then you can get these really hard frosts. Well, the lake slows down the warming effect, which means that you avoid some of the frosty, dodgy period in this early spring. You couple that with the fact that Riesling, as I said earlier, was a late budding grape variety, and it means that Riesling often avoids a lot of these frosts that you get with these cool continental climates. At the other end of the season, towards the end of the season, like we said with Finger Lakes, the lake's heated up during the summer and now is a warm source, and as the land cools down, that Lake Ontario is providing warmth to the vineyards and extends their growing season again, giving them an opportunity to ripen further and further and further. Eventually the lakes will cool down, and that's when you're going to get these frosts, and hopefully you can make these lovely ice wines, which, as I said earlier, got me into wine from drinking some nice ice wine in Canada. The last two countries that do a reasonable amount of Rieslings is Australia and New Zealand. In Australia, the big popular and famous regions are Clare Valley and Eden Valley, both in South Australia. And the big thing about Australian Rieslings are they're dry and they have often a very distinctive lime character to them. Lime is one of those flavors people don't usually use as a description, but if you've got a high acid wine with lime in there, then there's a fairly good chance it's an Aussie Riesling. You normally think of South Australia as being quite a warm Mediterranean climate, and it is. There's not much around as warm. So places like Clare Valley and Eden Valley need things to cool them down. Eden Valley's got some altitude that helps it, and it's a little bit protected. Whereas Clare Valley, even though it's a bit further inland in the Finders Range, it's got a fairly open run to the coast. So you get cool sea breezes coming in. You've got cold nights from being further inland away from the sea, because, as I said, the land cools down quicker and heats up quicker. So further away from the sea, the colder the nights are. And you've also got a little bit of altitude of 300 to 400 meters. So both of these things means that you do get Aussie Rieslings from Clare Valley and Eden Valley quite a lot, and that they're quite famous for these dry, limey Rieslings. Tasmania does make some Rieslings, but Tasmania is that island to the south of Victoria. Victoria is reasonably cool by Australian standards, and Tasmania is definitely cool climate. And here, the wines are much less ripe, and you're going to be much more floral in nature. And finally, but not least, is New Zealand. Go New Zealand. Riesling in New Zealand tends to be dry, sometimes off dry. In New Zealand, we've got dry Sauvignon Blanc, so sometimes it's quite nice to make something a little bit off dry or even sweet sometimes. But as a general call, you'd say New Zealand Rieslings tend to be dry. And the cold nights you often get from sinking air coming off the mountain ranges means that they do hold on to their acidity very, very nice. And you're going to see Rieslings in places like Marlborough, Central Otago, even Canterbury grows a little bit of Riesling as well. Okay, that ends our look at Riesling. It's certainly the king of white grapes, and it's not everybody's cup of tea, but a lot of winos do like Riesling.